Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of the Liberty Squadron Podcast. My name's Andrew Lewinsky, and I am joined this week with Marshall Staggs.
Hey everybody.
Rob Kaiser.
Hello.
And Jonathan Lee.
Hello everyone.
This week we have we had one big Nordic National Championship happen. There was about 100 people there. We got some cool data. One of the things I do want to shout out is this Guido Kessel's website. It is probably the coolest tournament website I think I've seen. It's got like so much data. We're going to be linking this to our Facebook page and to our notes for you guys to check out. It's got like everything from most common pilots to rankings to upgrades, bids. But I'm sure if you haven't seen it on Reddit or throughout Facebook, we'll make sure we link it on ours too. But first, the only thing it doesn't have though is it doesn't have the names of the players. Did anyone else notice that?
To protect their identity, or
oh yeah, names, it doesn't.
The names are so difficult that they're like, screw it.
Yeah, exactly. They're probably like, you can't pronounce these anyway.
I don't care about who any of these people are. I just want the hard data. I just want numbers and statistics.
So, the winning list. This list is so scary when you think about it. It's Jan Ors with the Multicrow title, Nora Wexley with Proton Torpedoes. Let that sink in for a second. Wedge Antilles with Crackshot and the S foils, and a Naked Sabine. So, every Y wing that you've seen to date has a turret on it, and that's it. And this just has proton torpedoes. It's such a big threat, but at the same time, it's like, do I really want to be blasting shots into this Y wing that might not even die?
Yeah, it's. So, I was. For a couple of weeks, I was running Nora with just proton bombs, like Nora and proton bombs, and I might have had dorsal turret on there, but I don't think so. And I think it's just a case of you not wanting to put a lot of points on any one particular ship. So she gets into range three, she fires her torpedoes, and then she's just two turning at range one, I guess. Just, and if she gets, you know, some an arc, or she can barrel roll or whatever, but I think that's, I think it's a situation of, it's one of those things where that's kind of just all she needs.
Right. Yeah. So like, that's the thing is like, I was thinking about it. It's like, if she gets into range one, she's automatically adding an evade to the dice and she's just setting up a next shot. Like she's probably target locking and not spending it for the proton torpedoes. Then she's getting in range to set up these shots. And then
yeah.
I haven't actually watched the videos. I'm just kind of theory crafting own situations in my head, but she's probably, like I said, getting these target locks and then going around setting the shot up, and now she's got a fully mounted proton torpedo coming at your face. While you're probably dealing with Jan Ors and Wedge Antilles and Sabine, even whatever, jumping around the entire board, where I really think this big threat here is Nora.
Jan Ors is primary only, right? She's got it, right?
Yeah, she is just primary only.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, but I guess she can get Nora four dice at range one. That's pretty good. Or she can get red. Yeah, I mean, she can give anyone an extra die. It's good for pretty much any ship in this list.
When you look at this list, you sort of want to kill everything in it. So there's no good targets. Or like, you kind of want to shoot everything. It gives your opponents sort of hard choices. But I mean, as much I like Rebels, but I just like imagining this in my head, I totally imagined this Imperial list that was the runner-up just stomping all over them, but obviously didn't happen.
So I really like this list. It's just, it's such a threat, and it's so simple that it's like, I'm just going to throw these four ships on the table, basically, and it won a 100-person tournament with it. So, big props to whoever you are.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have any names.
It's Andreas Carlson.
Andreas Carlson.
It's probably in List Fortress. It's but in List this, Fortress, yeah. This Nordic site is way better than List Fortress. Sorry, guys. If you look through like the top like 16, though, you just see constant death rains and red lines, scimitar squadrons. The runner-up was actually death rain, red line, and scimitar squadrons. All proton bombed, proton torpedoes.
Yeah, there's a lot of Boba Fett. There's a lot of Palob. It's like, yeah.
Everything you'd expect to see.
So, I mean, if you were flying that Rebel list against the runner-up, which was Death Rain, Redline, both with proton torpedoes, proton bombs, trajectory simulators, and ablative plating, and then two scimitars with barrage rockets. How can you even... I just meant approaching must be so hard.
Yeah, you can't fly anywhere.
I mean, you're in a Hawk and a Y-Wing and a T-65, so you're not... Like, you can't, like, you're not like Whisper or Soontir, or you're not dodging, and, like, how do you approach them? And I just, I'm impressed that he won.
Wedge, Nora, and Jan are probably all moving after Redline. So Redline's, I guess, Redline's I-5, and then those Rebel ships are all I-5. And then Sabine is just going wherever she wants. Like, she doesn't really care about, because she's just going to get in the way. So I... Yeah, maybe you just get super good at range control, and you use you use Jan's boost, and Wedge's barrel roll. I don't know.
So the Rebel list is at 198.
Okay.
And the Imperial list is at 199.
Yeah, so you have the bid. Okay. So you give first player, and then you just barrel roll all over the place.
You deny them the target locks.
Yeah.
Now, do you think something like this, like let's say you just line up for that jail start, you're trying to alpha one of those Scimitar Squadron pilots off the board?
No. You do not joust that list.
Well,
you will get fucking wrecked by proton bombs. I think it's a thing of where you just fly around the edge of the board and wait for them to make a mistake.
Yeah.
They'll come through the rocks eventually because they'll want to get their torpedoes off, and then you just... Yeah, I don't know. You cut in to range one and you kill something. But you let I think you let them come to you. I don't think you joust. But I'd be curious to see the game. Luckily we have the footage. So I will be watching that tomorrow while I'm supposed to be working.
Supposed to be working. So again, this website is amazing. I will link it to everyone. Check it out. It's got one of the cool things on here is it lists the most common pilots, and the total field, the number one pilot was Boba Fett, followed by the Scimitar Squadron pilots, and then Soontir fell surprisingly, which I don't even think he was like really in the top, any of like the top lists. Like, I'm looking down here, and where is the first Soontir fell?
List Fortress only has one Soontir, but there's a bunch of lists in the middle that haven't
entered. Yeah, so it looks like the first Soontir that shows up, it was 23rd.
Okay, maybe Soontir Fell was in a bunch of lists that went like 4 and 2 and then, you know, didn't make the cut for whatever reason. I'm assuming it was stuff like Soontir Whisper Redline or like Soontir Whisper Lieutenant Sai or it's stuff like that. It's like you have two good ships and then you slot a 52 point Soontir in somewhere in an Imperial list, and that's I'm assuming that that's what it was.
I'm a little shocked that Boba Fett was more common than Scimitar Squadron pilots. Like the fact that you can take like two or three of them in a list, that there was more Boba Fetts than...
Well,
I bet it was neck and neck. It was probably super close.
It could be like number of lists with Boba Fett versus number of lists with Scimitar Squadrons.
Oh, it could be that. Yeah, that's a good point.
It could only be listing it as one. Okay, so after Soontir was Redline, and then finally Wedge Antilles. Marshall, do you think that Wedge Antilles is what he's hyped up to be, or do you think... What's your opinion on him?
I mean, his ability is good on paper, but I think he's... I mean, he's in a chassis that is, I think, even at... What's his base cost? He's like 52?
He's 52, yeah.
He's 52? Yeah, I think even at 52 points, an X-Wing... An I-6 X-Wing is still bad, because it doesn't... He has no defensive power, and he can either modify his dice, or he can reposition. Those are his two options. And especially, like, the winning list... had, I guess, crack shot on Wedge, which I don't understand, but he won, so what do I know? Yeah, I don't know. I just don't... I think we're seeing... I mean, so Chris Allen talked about this on the Minox, and I suggest that everyone go listen to his rant. But for whatever reason, named X-Wings that are not Luke are just not winning matches at organized tournaments. And I think a lot of it has to do with the trade-off between repositioning and dice modification. But Wedge's ability is good, but I don't think it's that good. And I think he is number 5 on this list because a lot of people took him. And that's all that that number is telling us. And I think a lot of those people were probably like 3-3, 4-2, like winning some games, but you know, Wedge is not good enough to carry you to a 5-1 or a 6-0 day like Boba Fett is or Barrage Bombers are. Like, I just don't see it.
So everyone's saying that like Luke Skywalker is probably the best ship in the game, and like you hear it, you've heard it all over the place.
People are saying that
you're just not seeing him win things. Like, that's the problem. Like, he's all over this, all these lists. Like, you see him. He must have been sixth on this list.
Yeah, probably.
But it's just, I don't see him.
I think, I mean, the problem with, I mean, he gets just really expensive. I think people are loath to run him with, I mean, you put supernatural reflexes on him and it's hard not to, and then you put proton torpedoes, and then that's really expensive right there. And it's hard to find wingmen for him.
Yeah, at that price. What I'm seeing in this rundown on this website is Luke Skywalker and two bad ships. And I think that's what people are doing.
Luke Skywalker and Wedge and Thane.
Yeah, it's like Luke and Wedge and Thane and Luke and Jan. Jan and Nora are not necessarily bad ships, but the particular list I'm looking at right now has way too much stuff on Jan and Nora. Like Luke Wedge Nora, Luke Wedge Dutch, Luke Wedge Sabine, Luke... Yeah, I don't know. It's just not... I mean, these lists are like... They're not terrible. Like, they have good pieces in them, but they just don't work together for some reason.
Jonathan, did you want to say something?
No, I mean, I think... Yeah, it's just hard to find wingmen for Luke. And then when you don't put... I mean, I feel like you have to put supernatural reflexes on. I mean, there are other choices, but... supernatural reflexes is so good, and it's... And I think without it, Luke is kind of... If he didn't have super access to supernatural reflexes, he wouldn't be that great.
Have you messed around with like a non-supernatural Luke at all?
No, I haven't.
So, okay. But looking at these results, and I know people are saying, oh, the meta's not like shaken out or anything. But like at the same time, it's kind of like we're seeing this trend of red lines and scimitar squadrons always overperforming. Like, they're always in the top lists. And I mean, that basically is the meta right now, that you should have answers for these things when building lists and practicing for what you want to achieve. Because like I said, they're everywhere. These proton torpedo death rains, and all these barrage rocket bombers. It's just, this is the meta right now. Would you say not?
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, it's not what I've seen locally, but I mean, data-wise, it's... Yeah, I think that's... Overall, yeah.
Oh, man. I just saw this one list. It's three Warden Squadron pilots with barrage rockets and proton bombs. And Sabine with Duke and 9 Numb.
Oh, is that a thing?
It's place 38, which...
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's not good, but it's still...
Yeah, people were talking about barrage rockets on K-Wings, and... Jonathan, I vaguely remember you trying it once, but otherwise I don't think I've really seen it.
I mean, so if you put barrage rockets on a K-Wing and you have a front arc, and then you can turn your bow tie to the sides, and then you have a bomb, and it costs about 50-ish points. And then you can put a bomb in a crew, and it'll be about 50 points. So I've been experimenting with Supernatural Luke with two Warden Squadron K-Wings. Mm-hmm. And then Sabine crew is actually pretty good.
Yeah, I remember Sabine crew being super annoying. That random tractor token was really clutch.
But as for, I think maybe it isn't Rebels that are bad, but it's just everything else is so good. I mean, speaking of like the Bomber and the Punisher, the base chassis is really cheap. So if you look at, all right, so Wedge with is 52 points, and you put proton torpedoes on him, he's 61 points. Or you could have Redline with proton torpedoes, proton bombs, trajectory simulator, also at 61 points at the same point cost.
Yeah.
And although like Wedge is frightening, that Redline is like amazing at that price.
I guarantee we'll see a point increase of some of these chassis on January. If they know what's good for the game, I think they will.
I mean, and I think the I don't mind ordnance being good, or but I feel like those bombers being cheap, especially the bomber, the base chassis at 28 points, it pushes TIE fighters out of the game, actually, where people might have, like, why would you put in TIE fighters as filler when you could put in, you know, a barrage rocket bomber?
Yeah.
Not that much more.
Yeah.
I'm looking, I think I've only saw one TIE swarm in this entire list. Number 62. You got a couple of these Dreya swarms popping up. We're going to go into a little bit of swarms a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk to this one.
And I think, so, I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, the TIE swarm can be challenging to fly, but what's surprising is sort of the lack of mini swarms. You would sort of thought like ace plus a mini swarm would be a good sort of archetype, but you don't really see that.
Well, I can tell you about that, actually, because I ran that at our Wave 1 tournament this weekend, or I guess our 2.0 format tournament, and it was Vader and four TIEs. And it's not enough TIEs to get through other TIE swarms, but it is enough TIEs that Boba Fett will fuck you. So it is, it's a bad list. It's like, so, I thought it was going to be great, because I was like, oh, I have Boba Fett, or I have Vader, and I have Hal Runner and three TIE fighters, and it's going to be a nice little cluster of super efficient ships, and Vader can come around and flank, and that does not work at all. It's I don't think that, at least not for Imperials, I don't think that archetype is viable.
So I know we didn't put this in the show notes, but we did have that first edition, or this, I'm sorry, second edition tournament this past weekend, and my general thoughts is, like, I wasn't impressed. I know you had similar thoughts too, that it was just like,
I was not into it at all.
And maybe it's just because we only have very limited stuff right now, but I don't see this shaking out until we have more things available to play with. It just didn't feel like everyone, like, literally, I think there was 10 players there and probably like 6 TIE swarms.
Yeah, it was like 6 variations. TIE swarms, like 2 lists that were like a bunch of X-wings and 2 lists that were like Boba Fett and a Scum Falcon.
Yeah. So it just seemed very like, by like game 2, I was just like, I'm over this. Like, I'm sitting here just colliding our TIE fighters with another person, and it just was not fun.
It's so exhausting.
Hopefully when everything shakes out, we have a lot more to play with than just 2 different things, which will not be fun.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
So let's move on.
We can move on. Yeah.
So we had 2 things this past week, or last week. We had the T-70 expansion spoiled, and we have a Polish TIE FO that we are not getting into because it's in Polish, and I don't feel like translating everything and trying to figure out what everything means. So we're just going to go over the T-70 expansion.
Yeah, long story short on the TIE FOs, most of the TIE FO pilots are the same. Omega Leader is I-6 now, and that's pretty much all you need to know.
Yeah, so if you really want to know that information, you can seek it out on one of the various websites that are posting our Facebook pages, and have fun. Google Translate it. But, all right, so let's go into the T-70. First thing that was spoiled, we have the integrated S-foils. Now, they're very similar to the T-65, but I believe the T-65s give you the boost when they're closed, where the T-70 give you the barrel roll and the focus into a red barrel roll. Also, while you perform a primary attack, if the defender is not in your bullseye arc, roll 1 fewer die. So you still get that bullseye arc bonus if they are in it. Pretty cool.
Yeah, this is, yeah. I wonder if it's going to be free, or it's, I mean, it's objectively better than the T-65 version. So
it is, yeah.
I don't know if it'll be free. About it.
I always thought, like, they kind of were just like, this is like a fun card to, like, why would you not take this?
But yeah, I don't think we've had a configuration that costs points. Like, the U-Wing one is free too, I think.
The gunboat titles are configurations, right?
Yeah, yes. And I can't remember they if they cost points or not.
They are not free.
Okay.
Okay.
So
yeah, so I mean, even if this is not free, even if it's like 2 points or 3 points, or I don't know if I was about to say 5 points, but I don't know if I would pay for it if it were 5 points.
I'm sitting here like second guessing myself. I'm like, make sure that, oh no, they are free.
Okay.
I'm sure some listener was probably like, oh my god, they are free. But no, the gunboat configurations are both free.
Yeah, but this is great. Throw some proton torpedoes on that thing, just focus and barrel roll all over the place, like do whatever. Yeah, it's cool.
Now, I mean, with the, so previously the weapon hardpoint built-in of chassis ability, you can equip any cannon, torpedo, or missile upgrade. Do you think proton torpedoes is the right answer, or would you consider putting a cannon or something else on? HLC okay?
I feel like I want to say HLC, but I don't know, because
I think those 4 points are better off somewhere else. Unless you have the four points. I like the fact that you can equip it, but I'm just not sold on HLC in general yet. Like, maybe it has a place somewhere, but I haven't found it, and I don't think anybody else has. You never see it pop up anywhere.
Also, it makes me think, like, they're never going to come out with a cannon as good as, like Mangler cannon. I don't think it's ever going to come back.
No, I don't. It would have to be the price of proton torpedoes, at least. Especially if it were range 1-3. Like, the thing that was so great about Mangler cannon is that you could just always use it.
Here's the thing about HLC. It was like, if you took away the range bonus, like, maybe it was like one of the only cannons since it has such a specific requirement. Like, if it took away the range bonus, I think it would still be worth taking. But
yeah,
I think that's a big kill for it.
Yeah.
Let's move on then. We got BB-8 Astromech and the BB Astromech. So BB-8 is, before you execute a blue maneuver, you may spend a charge. It's got two charge tokens on it to perform a barrel or boost action. And the BB Astromech is just the same thing with only barrel roll action.
Yeah, this is super cool. I'm into it.
It's super cool, and I like that it's limited. It's not a recurring charge, so you can only use it twice a game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So I was just saying, like, Poe could do cool things before he activates and then execute a green maneuver, because he can essentially link any of his actions off of that barrel roll or boost, take the stress, and then could he technically then... I don't have the Poe card in front
of
me.
No, he can only do his ability once a turn.
Oh, right. It's on charge. A charge, okay. Yeah. Right. So, but still, he can do the boost, barrel roll, and then another action... and then still clear that stress. Pretty cool.
I mean, it's the same. It's that same thing of Poe has pushed the limit now, so he can do all the push the limit things he could do in first edition.
So, I thought two things. So one, I find like the BB Astromech. I think it's exactly the same as first edition BB-8, the BB Astromech, except it has charges.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, I mean, in first edition, you saw a little BB-8, but not a ton. But I don't know, somehow it just feels so much better now. Maybe it's because everything else has been toned down.
Well, pre-movement repositioning is, I mean, that's why we see Supernatural all over the place.
Yeah, but you didn't see a lot of BBA except like some fringe Poe builds in first edition.
Right, like the BB-8 intensity relay thing. Yeah, I mean, it was fun, but it wasn't as good as regen, so you didn't see it.
Yeah.
And now I think like regen is not as good, I guess. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Now, do you think would you put BB-8 on Poe as opposed to R4 Astromech?
No, he gets R4 every time. Unless BB-8 is the same price as R4, which he couldn't possibly be, because his ability is better than R4, but on Poe specifically, I think you gotta just turn Poe into a TIE Interceptor.
Just getting those two turn greens.
Then again, I will contradict myself. I think boosting with BB-8 and then doing a one bank is basically the same thing as doing a two turn, kind of. And then you get, you know, and then you get three actions. So
because it makes you harder to block.
Yeah,
you know, that's you can, like, escape and things. I don't know if
You think he's going to be more expensive than R2-D2? Like, would you pay 9 points for BB-8? Would you pay 10 points for him?
Well, 10, so Supernatural is 12.
Right.
So he's like Supernatural on charges. right?
Yeah. So, yeah, with the blue maneuver restriction.
With the blue maneuver restriction. So he's not as good as Supernatural Reflex. So you can't... So for Supernatural, being able to, like, boost and then, like, Talon roll is, like, really great.
It's functionally pretty different. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
so you can't do that with... And then the other thing is, and I'm trying... I feel like in the A-Wing that they spoiled... I thought... I could be just imagining it, but I feel like they did spoil primed thrusters before.
We know... Yeah, there is a primed thrusters card, and it does kind of the same thing.
So, yeah, if Poe is stressed, he can't do BB-8 unless he has primed thrusters on. Then do you do prime thrusters, and then how many points is all that?
Was that spoiled with the, like, we don't even know if they have a tech slot, or do we know that already?
There is a prime thrusters card in a spread somewhere in an image that they spoiled.
Gotcha. I'm
pretty sure. Yeah, it was back in those A-Wing articles or something.
It might have been right when they announced the A-Wing. Because after Gen Con, or... No, it wasn't Gen Con. It was... I don't know. Whenever they announced the Clone Wars stuff, they also announced Wave 2. And there was a big spread of A-Wing stuff.
Yeah, actually, I found... It's in an article, Spark of Rebellion, from August 3rd. And it has a... prime thrusters you can see most of it.
Okay.
I guess that settles the debate, though, if R2-D2 Poe or BB-8 Poe is better. The long debate from first edition.
Oh, yeah.
Can no longer bring R2-D2.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he doesn't... But yeah.
I mean, he could bring the R2 astromech, but it's just not the same.
Unless they make a resistance R2-D2 astromech.
Ooh. Oh, that'd be cool.
I guess they could. I mean, he hasn't been in any of the movies or anything in the, like, astromech slot, like, has he?
No, he hasn't.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's been in the movies, obviously, but not as in any of these T-70s. All right, well, let's move on to the pilots. We have, I'm going to butcher these names because I am not in the Star Wars world, but is it Carcoon or Carcon?
Carcoon. Kirkin.
Kirkin?
Whatever.
Okay.
It's Blue Ace. It's a little bit better, but
yeah,
probably not.
So while you boost, you can use the one turn or templates instead of the banks. Then we have Joff Sea Striker. After you lose one shield, gain one of a token.
That's Red Ace.
Red Ace.
And then Lieutenant Bastion. After a ship at range 1-2 is dealt a damage card, you may acquire a lock on that ship. A pilot skill too, I don't think that's terrible. Or initiative too, I should say.
You know, your friends fire proton torpedoes, and then you get a target lock, and then you can fire your own proton torpedo.
And then J. Chris Tubbs, after you fully execute a blue maneuver, you may choose a friendly ship at range 0-1. If you do, that ship removes one stress token.
Bold prediction, hot take coming in. Of the T-70 pilots that you see competitively, you will see Poe and you will see Tubbs. And those are the only two that you will see. Tubbs is really good.
Just, it's the only way to, like, inspiring recruit on a T-70.
Yeah, heard on another podcast, it was on Scum and Villainy, someone speculate that Tubbs is a counter to Kylo Ren putting panicked pilot on someone.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, yeah, I'll show you the dark side does the same thing. Yeah. If he's running around dishing out panic pilots,
That makes sense.
And then, Andrew, you skipped the Black One title. Or that was spoiled already, right? Black One.
Yeah, I think it was spoiled. Okay. We can go over it. But
I don't know if we talked about it, yeah.
So the Black One title is after you perform adds a slam action to your bar. And then it says after you perform a slam action, lose one charge. Then you may gain one ion token to remove one disarm token. If your charge is inactive, you cannot perform the slam action. So you get a one-time slam, and then you can take an ion to be able to shoot that same turn.
That's good. How many points was Burnout Slam in first edition?
It was 1 point.
Yes.
So this will be more. This will be more than 2 points.
Yeah, it's probably like if it's more than four, I'll just not take it. But for less than 4 points, I think it's pretty good.
I mean, So you could do things like two turn, and like,
and then torpedo somebody.
Yeah, like,
or three straight or three turn, three talon roll.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sure. I mean, now if you're Poe, does I guess there are no free actions in 1.0 anymore. So if you do Poe's ability, can you like take a target lock and then slam?
I think so.
You should be able to, right?
Yeah.
Or else, like, what would be the point of this card?
I mean, you could slam and then... Well, I mean, I guess it depends on range if you could slam and then target lock.
Yes, it would be a red... It would be a red slam action. So, yeah. Target lock, red slam. Ooh, I guess if you did, like, a talon roll or something, you would wind up double stressed. But you would be able to pull a crazy move and then torpedo something.
Four forward boost, four forward again.
Sure.
Four forward boost, 4K turn.
That's and then you end up behind them, and then you're just like, oh hey, you don't care about that ion token.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it'll see play. Like it's good for. I mean, just what Jonathan said was that you could like do something like four forward boost, and then slam if you need to get out of those situations, because we know people like to load Poe up.
It's a great panic button, yeah.
So if you need to get the heck out of there, and you can use it in that matter. So I like it. It'll see play. Did we touch base everything on that? All right, looks good. Again, the TIE-FO, if you're really interested in that, I'm not interested in translating everything at the moment. We'll have it next week, and we'll go over it. So this week, we're going to jump right into a meta talk. Well, on Tuesday night, I was playing against a friend, and I put down a swarm in front of him, and, like, in the, like, second round, we were about to start shooting, and he just looks at me, and he's like, how do you even engage this? Like, I don't know what to do. And, like, that does bring up a good topic, because if you're, like, a newer player, and you see that, you like, your first instinct is, you know, just to fly spaceships at each other and shoot them, which comes down to who's going to have the better jousting list. Yeah.
If you don't know how X-Wing math works, like you have to go on gut instinct. And I don't know about you guys, but my gut is wrong about 100% of the time. So.
50% of the time, you're wrong every time.
That's absolutely how it works.
All right, so we wanted to go over some different things about what you could do to give yourself the advantage against flying against a swarm. Marshall, did you want to talk about rock placement, or you want me to take this?
I want you to take this, because what I will say about rock placement is that it's something that I am ashamed to admit I put almost no thought into. Like, if I'm flying a list with a lot of ships, I want the rocks far apart. If I'm flying a list with like three ships, I want the rocks super close together. If I'm flying large base ships, I want the rocks super far apart. And that is like, that is my decision tree, and that is as far as it goes. So
that's a lot of thought right there.
Go ahead. Is it the, I feel like it's not. I feel like rock placement is like one of those secret arts of X-Wing that Andrew is about to explain to me.
Guess what? I'm probably going to get it all wrong. But
he'll say, place this rock three range bands in, and then place another one, two range bands from that one, and then place the last one range band from that one.
Right. So with if you're going against a swarm, one of the things they like to do is fly in formation, and because they usually have some kind of reroll system going on, and if you break up their formation and prevent them from taking actions, you can give yourself the upper edge. So if you're thinking about rock placement, what I would do is I would try to make some kind of formation in the middle of the board or close to the side that you think they're going to line up on, and basically scatter your rocks one away from each other. Now, I know your list might not be the best for flying around rocks or anything like that, but at the same time, you want to try to draw them into that field, because if they start hitting rocks or if they start bumping because they have to start avoiding rocks, it's going to give you the upper edge. They're going to either have to break formation, peel off, or sacrifice their actions to get these shots off, which I mean, vice versa, a Swarm player might see this and completely avoid that engagement altogether. But if you want to give yourself a little bit of an edge, you can, like, put yourself in the middle of that asteroid field or debris cloud arrangement. So you have to force that engagement in there. Make them fly into it and give yourself that upper edge. If you can draw them through it, you've probably won the game. If they start chasing you through the rocks, then I guarantee you're going to have the upper edge in that.
Yeah, if they're flying six plus ships, they will make a mistake unless they're some kind of savant.
Yeah, I mean, even if like they will have a harder time navigating through those rocks, and like I said, one or two of them might have to peel off out of formation and regroup at a later moment, mm-hmm. but that's taking those two ships out of the fight.
Yeah.
Completely.
So, I mean, if you're talking like a Tie Swarm or like a Jonas Swarm where they have to be within range one of each other, you know, they're going to fly really tight and almost always they're going to start in the one of the corners. Okay, so they're starting in the corner and then they're going to go forward. I mean, they can turn, like one hard turn and run along the bottom edge, but then they end up running long instead of wide, if you know what I mean. And it's better for them to be wide.
Right.
Where, like, you know, you'd rather have be in rows, like big long rows, than in two skinny columns. So what I would normally do is I would take the biggest rock that's available, like the biggest thing, and as they come up the side, there's going to come a crucial turn where they have to either turn or bank in, and then you want to put that rock right in the spot where they'd want to be. So it would be maybe halfway up the board edge and maybe range two or so in, like just right there, so that if they're turning in, then it's going to like break them up. So then they have to decide whether to go through that or K-turn or go all the way down the edge. And then the thing is, you have to block one side, you have to block the other side, and then they presumably cornered their rocks, so then you take the last one and you just sort of jam up the middle. If you cluster the rocks a little too tight in the center, then it gives them room to sort of fly around it, you know. So you want it so that it sort of breaks up, because what they want is, a lot of times they would want like a big L, so they line up their rocks on their side, they fly right past them, and so say you have a L shape, and they would set up like in, say, the bottom right corner. Mm-hmm. And then it gives them, they fly up and they have plenty of room to fly into the center of the board, you know, and then either you're exposed, or if you're hiding behind the rocks, you're jammed up on the other side. So you don't let them set up that L.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what if you're flying like a Drea Swarm, though, they have a lot more flexibility. So I'm not sure what the best way to place rocks for that would be.
Secrets. Can't tell them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because the Drea Swarm could, like, you can spread out a bit more. You can spread out a lot more.
Yeah, and especially one of the things with the Drea Swarm is it's something I've been flying a lot as of recently. And with that, they kind of do spread out a lot more. And because a lot of these Drea Swarms are bringing quad jumpers, they are probably throwing your ships onto the rocks. So, that is something else to look at, is what kind of swarm you're going up against. And it is flying through the rocks the best bet. But at the same time, they still want to stay in some kind of formation, because if they do break up, then they're going to have to actually like regroup at a certain point, and then you can just pick things off if you can range control them. But now that we're talking of, we'll go into range control a bit with the Joust. First thing you want to ask yourself is, do you have a better jousting list than your opponent? And probably don't.
If you're up against a swarm and you're not flying a swarm, you probably don't.
Unless you're bringing like trajectory simulator, proton bombs, and ordnance, or like
something. And if
like
the meta is any indication, there's a good chance that you are.
Exactly.
If you're worried about swarms, that's the kind of stuff that's going to give them a really hard time. But let's assume that you're not.
Let's assume you're not. So let's say you have like a two-ship list, like something like Boba, Guri, or I don't know. Has anyone seen a Dash on the table or a Lebo?
Nope.
Yeah. So one of the things you want to do first off is don't joust it. Figure out so the rule of 11. If you're not familiar with the rule 11, Marshall, you want to touch that? You're pretty good at this.
Oh, am I though?
No. Okay, Jonathan's pretty good at this.
So the rule of 11. It comes from there's an old YouTube video on X-Wing strategy tips back like Wave 3. We're talking in first edition. So it's basically if you line up at setup, if you line up as far forward as you can, so one range band, like range one, and if your opponent lines up at one range band in, that you have to move, once your ships and their ships have moved a total of 11 base lengths, you will be in range three. So by 11, so it means if you do a four forward on a small base, you move five, because it's four plus your base, and if your opponent does a five forward, you know, that's five, and then they move five plus one because of the base. So they move six, you move five, and then you're at range three. Also, so if you move, so if you manage to move, what, 16, then you can be at range one. You know, is that right?
One, two, yes.
Yeah. So then what you want to be is, yeah, so you need to, you want to, so depending on the type of list, you want to avoid, so say they have ordnance and you don't want to be at range three. You want to be just outside of range three. So you want to move like say a total of 10 or nine bases. And the next round, you want to jump into range one.
So one of the other things that you can think about with this range control is like shooting past them. So if you know you're going to be at range three and then range two or range one, then the next turn, you know that you can have plenty of room to shoot past them based on the range that they were before. So that's another good thing to learn is the how, as far as range, how it matches up to the rulers. So a range five is a range two, I'm sorry, is a speed five maneuver.
Right.
You know, that's just some basic X-Wing stuff. But if you know that and you are in range two, you know that a range or a speed five will pass that on the next pass, so you can shoot past these things to try to set up your next attack on them. So with that being said, though, the joust is a very range control thing. So if you're lining up directly across, that's, you know, your most standard joust. The next thing is a lot of times you see these players will line up on opposite sides, they'll move up to the middle of the board and then turn left into the center, and you're still jousting regardless. Like, even though you're like, oh, well, we jousted in the middle, or we attacked in the middle of the asteroid field, it's still a joust. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to think about it or not, that's what you're trying to avoid. Unless, obviously, you have the better firepower. And with what Jonathan was saying with the rule of 11, too, is that just it's a 3x3 square, so you can go into the middle, and then you can start range controlling again that way. Like, you know, if you set up rocks at a certain point where it is range two outside of the outside of the end of the mat, you can now know where you are based off of that one rock. You can try to range control it as much as you can based off of that one rock, knowing where it is. Do you guys agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great that range two thing with the rock is like a great trick. When you're cornering rocks, it's a really good way to like kind of get some context about where you are on the board. Yeah,
right. And like when I set up rocks, I like to try, if I try to put one on each side of the corner, just so you have that general idea of where you are and how far you are from the edge of the board. Mm. And how far like your opponent is, and like what speed maneuvers you are going to need to do to engage at a certain point. Mm-hmm. Because if you know that the one corner is a range two out and the other corner is a range two out, you can see where everything is on the board, and then you can start calculating, okay, well, if that's already range two, that's obviously a 2.5 speed maneuver. So if he's range two and I'm range two away from the board where these rocks are, then you're already at a five. Then, yeah, it is a five, right? Because then you have to get up to 11. So another... Yeah. Two maneuvers will put you in that range three band. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Make sense?
Yeah. So I think another thing, so like swarms, if you have a lot of ships and you're like in, they want to engage, they want to be in like rows, right? Like they want to have maxima, they want all their guns to be able to shoot. And what they don't want to be is flying in a narrow column. So if you imagine like a row, okay, so say you have three TIE fighters and three, say you have six TIE fighters, three by three, or three by two. And so three in the front row, three in the back, they want to just fly forward. If they turn, then they become a column of two by three, if that makes sense, where you can often shoot the ones in the front and maybe the back ones are out of range.
Right. Yeah. It's easier to isolate one of them and pick it off.
Yeah. So you would like to engage them like on the side rather than line up in front of them. So you want them to be flying along and then they see you coming on the side and they're like, okay, I have to turn to face you. But the ones, they end up with ones all the way. So say they're coming up the right side. The TIE fighters on the left might be in range, but the TIE fighters on the right won't be necessarily. So you want to be able to like pick off those ones. And then by the time they swing all their TIE fighters around, you've either killed some or maybe you've turned around and are running to like set up another set of shots. Because you never, as the swarm player, you don't want to be in that column. And sometimes it's tough because if you hard turn, you kind of always end up in that way. If you bank and then bank again, you can swing your entire, like a hinge, you can swing your entire formation around. Mm. But if you put rocks in there, then they can't hinge their formation around, if that makes sense.
So it's a good way to break it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things, you could think about doing is, let's say you bring that Soon Tierfell Ace or Fanral Ace, you can try to flank them, which they might try to turn into you, but then you're going to be exposing, they're going to be basically like negating like half of your list without shots or anything, and you can take advantage of that, where something with like Soon Tierfell and Fen can obviously go really fast, hit them, and then get out of there really quick. So you might want to try to like shoot him down the opposite side of the board, engage on like an end, hitting one or two where like only one or two can shoot back, and then getting out of there, hoping that they kind of chase this really point fortress ace out there and try to like draw them off that way. You see it a lot of times where like Duncan's a great example of this, where he'll just basically throw something in, hope that they chase them, and then just shoot it completely right out, and then have the rest of his list just clean up everything that made the mistake of chasing after.
Yeah, it's always good to like just put a little bait out.
But the bait and switch.
Yeah.
All right, so one of the other things that you could do, so with ties, or I'm sorry, just any swarm, you could want to make sure that you know your win condition to this. You should know how much each ship costs, even though it's going to be a lot, and figure out the ship cost of each, the half points of each, and what you can afford to lose. Games are at an hour and 15 minutes, so if you are only able to like have the firepower to kill half of that swarm, make sure you know what your ships cost and that you how many of their ships you have to kill and then get out of there, like if that makes sense. Anything else that we want to touch base on with TIE swarms?
Covers it. I mean, I think that applies to TIE swarms. I think our advice applies to like Jonas swarms. If you're flying against, I was just thinking of our friend Chris, if you're flying against his Whisper and
Striker
swarm, this is not going to help you because those strikers can be anywhere.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of Chris, how many Admiral Sloans were actually at Nordics?
Because the problem with those TIE strikers, they move so fast and are so squirrely, and they can just reposition in however way they want. And
right. I always feel like that kind of thing should be everywhere, but I guess it's probably not.
What?
The Sloan swarm stuff.
I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So
how many ships would constitute a swarm?
Five. I would consider five a mini swarm.
I would. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds right.
Five is a mini swarm. I would say seven is at least a full fledged swarm. You rarely see eight.
Yeah, ships. I don't think there's a good way to do eight in 2.0.
So actually there were a good amount of Sloans.
Oh really?
I got a little distracted there.
All
right. Maybe you could fit like two escape, like six quad jumpers and like an autopilot drone and then L3. Maybe, I don't know.
So we actually did the math today. You can bring an autopilot drone, and if someone decides to line him up directly across, you can make it to the other side. You might be able to just put an autopilot drone in the middle of the board and like three bank your way towards them with barrel rolls and have it blow up in their face. That is the ultimate swarm strategy. If you go up against a swarm and you're like, well, I got just the thing for you, a proton bomb coming right at your face. No, don't do that. That's a terrible idea.
You'd be better off taking a bid.
Yeah. So one of the, okay, so I know this is a little off topic, but one of the things that, like, I know some people are saying, like, you know, you shouldn't take a bid because you probably can't handle it or anything like that. But one of the things about bids is if you have a, like, one ship down at half points left, like, you don't lose those points. Like, if you have, like, a, I don't know, like a 60 point Luke or something and he's at half points, you still get that 38 points if you have like an 8 point bid, which is super useful.
Yeah, it's something to consider when you're looking at taking an extreme bid. And that's a holdover from 1.0 where your 47 point Miranda was really a 52 point Miranda or whatever. Right. But I don't know. Like every time I build a list specifically with a bid, it like, and maybe it's just because I haven't been to a major tournament yet, but it doesn't seem worth it. It seems like I would rather just have the ability to like play around with the 6 or 7 points or whatever that I've cut. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's something to think about. So, I mean, these are just some tips. Granted, we haven't seen too many swarms, but I think the most common is seeing Jonas with a bunch of bombers along those lines. Yeah. You're seeing, like I said, a lot of Drea swarms out there every once in a while. But just some things to consider.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next, we are hosting PAX Unplugged November 30th to December 2nd. Jonathan, you probably have the most on this if you want to take this.
Yeah, so at PAX, so PAX is that Friday through that Sunday, and on Friday is the system open, and so everyone who goes 5-1 or 6-0 makes the cut, and the cut is going to be on Saturday, and on Saturday they have the extended qualifier. So the extended qualifier would be like last year's hyperspace, and if you go 6-0. You win a invite to Worlds, and for the system open. And if you make the cut, but you get eliminated, you can hop right in into the extended qualifier.
Oh, okay, yeah. So they are still doing that.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, they are.
I mean, not that I'm going to make the cut. Not that that's something I have to worry about. But it's good to know that they're still doing that. That was a cool idea.
So when you're in the extended qualifier, and you start winning, you'll be like, oh, look, someone just got knocked out of the cut, and now you have to play them.
Yeah, so I guess they just, like, put you right into Swiss for the next round.
Yeah.
And as you go, so Gold Squadron, not to talk about other podcasts on our podcast, but Gold Squadron just had an interview with one of the guys from Cascade Games, and he talks at length about it. And as you win, instead of doing, you're going to win tickets, and then you can spend the tickets at the prize wall. And the tickets, you can earn them not just in the main event and not just in the qualifier, but in their side events also.
From what they've done in like years past, they have like prizes from like previous events and everything, like Worlds and different system opens and like the regionals. So you can probably grab some like cool dice and templates.
Mm.
I'm really excited to see if they do the dial covers. I really want to get my hands on some of them.
Yeah, what are the, have we seen those yet? Like they have like they're doing acrylic dial covers, is that what it is?
That's what it looks like for they've only done the bounty hunters right now, but it like they actually have like the ship on the dial cover, which is pretty cool.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then they announced that this app Best Coast Pairings is going to be they're going to be using this app for the system open. And I'd never heard of it before, but apparently it's been around for years, used in other game systems. And on, not to mention another podcast, but on the Birmingham Barons, there was an interview with the guy from Best Coast Pairings. But apparently you can submit your list online, you can check in online, you can submit your match results online. So you don't have to interact with any human beings other than your opponent.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the other things that I thought was really cool about this was you can see standings. So you don't have to, like, hunt down the TO to ask for a standings or, like...
Yeah, that's really cool.
Sometimes they don't post on what now you have. You can check your MOV. You can check where you stand, what you... If you have to make any kind of, like, dire, like, decisions for your next round, mm-hmm. you can now check it on this app, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, this is super cool. I can't believe the X-Wing community has not been using it for, I don't know, however long it's been around, for 3 years or whatever. It's, it just seems super useful.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, he said that we're the testing ground for it, so hopefully everything
goes well. Cascade hasn't used it?
I think they said they're going to use it for some other events coming up, but like I think we're the first big X-Wing mm-hmm. to actually utilize the app.
Oh, work. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're going to use it at a Destiny event coming up, and then PAX.
Cool.
So we're going to have a bunch of stuff for PAX coming up over the next couple weeks, and so stay tuned for that, and we will give you more information on that.
Hopefully we get an official announcement soon.
Yeah, right?
We still haven't had that.
In true FFG fashion, it won't come until another 2 weeks. One of the things that I know they did say in one of the Cascade interviews was that they are doing a lot of these system opens outside of conventions, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's nice.
Like, they're doing, like across the street of a convention or something along those lines. The list that they put out looks pretty solid. They said that there's running until actually next November, that they have, like, maybe 3 or 4 more dates to add.
Yeah, I mean, and I heard the guy from Cascade had said specifically, he said people in California and Texas should not worry, but he didn't give any details.
Yeah, well, hopefully we have hopefully FFG puts out the final list. All right, so next we want to shout out for East Coast Gamers is hosting the Toys for Tots. It's a Swiss-style event. I believe that they ask that you bring a toy with them. It doesn't actually say it on here. Yeah,
pretty standard.
It's usually there it goes. It is entrance fee is a new unwrapped toy for kids of any age. Donating more than one toy is appreciated but not required. It's for a good cause. They do great events up at East Coast Gamers, and you will, like I said, you'll probably be walking away with more in your hands than you brought. So, big shout out to Mike Bird and organizing all that, but check that out. Any closeout, any shout outs? Jonathan, you got anything?
No, not this week.
Marshall?
No.
Rob, you're alive.
I'm alive. Yep.
Any shout outs?
No.
Good. Okay. All right, guys. Well, then that should do it for this week's episode. So get out there and fly something.
See you. Good night.